Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined today by sports columnist Paul Zeiss for our weekly Zeiss is Right video, sponsored today by Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. We'll talk about them in a little bit. Paul, how are you today?
I'm good, man. I can't complain. It seems like it's been the weather's back under control. We can stop panicking about it being 90 degrees.
I know, right? It's finally down to a nice, comfortable in the 60s every night. It's real nice. Paul, I want to get right into it with the Steelers with you today. We're a week into training camp, and the Steelers can do no wrong. Everyone in camp looks great. Everyone looks wonderful. We're in that honeymoon period here, Paul, where the hype seems to start to get a little bit out of control. You don't hear about anyone who's doing poorly, only who's doing well. I just want to ask you, is there anything that's coming out of Latrobe so far that sounds too good to be true to you? We have a lot of praise for the inside linebackers. We've got praise for Joey Porter Jr., praise for Broderick Jones. There's praise all around. Is there anything that you're a little skeptical of, that once they actually start playing games is going to look a little bit different than it does on the practice field?
Well, I mean, the offense in general. Adam, the offense, and I don't know how anybody can feel good about the offense until we see it start to play in live games. You know, I mean, I want to listen. I'm as big of a Kenny Pickett supporter, and I want him to do well. I want him to be the star that we think he can be. I'm as big on that bandwagon as, but he hasn't proven it yet in games. I mean, people are talking about, what was it, the Ravens game or whatever it was where he led the drive. And, wow, that's, it could be things to come. But I would be willing to bet that if you go through and go through the careers of a whole bunch of journeyman, mediocre-type quarterbacks, you could probably find a few moments in their highlight tapes where they showed they could be the man, which is why they were able to have a 5 or 8 or 10-year career, right, because they proved a couple of times, and then every coach thinks, boy, that's the flash that we want to capture. We can get that. We know we can get that. I mean, again, until he does it week after week after week after week after week and proves he can do it, I don't know how people can, have all of this, blind faith that it's going to, magically he's going to be the guy. I think he will, but I don't know that. And we won't know that. Also, with Broderick Jones and with, the rest of the offensive line, okay, a couple of padded periods in practice is not the same as a game. And so when I look at it like that, I just say basically, I mean, I have to see this happen. I have to see it. And on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, Joey Porter Jr., he's a very talented guy. Let's see what happens when he's playing against receivers who are NFL caliber receivers. The other thing is they just went out and got K'Juan Alexander. Has anyone stopped to ask why they felt the need to go get another inside linebacker? I mean, if these guys were tearing it up like we hear they are, why exactly did you go out and get another guy at that position? And I think the answer is pretty clear. They obviously you want depth, but they have depth. They probably are starting to get concerned about one or both of the guys they brought in. So, to me, I agree with you when I hear people talk about camp and talk about how great they are and everything else. I'm just like, it's camp. By the same token, I look at it like this. They're probably not as good as Kansas City, Buffalo, right? It remains to be seen if they're as good as Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, the Browns if Deshaun Watson's playing well, and the Bengals, right? I don't think they're as good as Jacksonville. That's six teams right there. You know, the Chargers are probably better. That's seven. I think the Jets might be better. You know, they had a great defense last year. Now they have an offense. So it's not just about how good you think this team is. How good are the teams that they have to compete with out there in the AFC? It, to me, that is the larger question. And one that won't be answered until we start to see the game start. But you're right. The camp has started. You would think this team's going to go 17-0. Kenny Pickett's going to go. He's going to throw for 5,050 touchdowns. You know, but Najee Harris is going to run for 1,820 touchdowns. The defense is going to pitch 9 shutouts. You'd think that's what's going to happen, just based on listening to what people are reporting and talking about coming out of camp.
Paul, I want to pull up that offense thread a little bit. One of the biggest questions that Jerry Dulac got in his weekly chat this week, and I'll include the link to that down in the description, is throws to the middle of the field. We didn't see a ton of it last season. I think it was a big weakness for the Steelers offense. And Jerry's observation so far has been that they're not throwing a ton to the middle of the field. The guys like Allen Robinson, Calvin Austin III, Pat Freiermuth, they're not getting the extra attention that I think a lot of Steelers fans want them to see. Is that a concern for you, considering how this offense looked last year and considering, you know, what you're saying is you have to see it work first for you to believe in it?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is you've got Pat Freiermuth. You've probably now got Allen Robinson. You've got, who knows, maybe Darnell Washington. But you've got some options in the middle of the field. Even Najee Harris out of the backfield a little bit. I would say that, you know, they can use the middle of the field. They've got the players to do it. I just don't know that necessarily the way the offense is designed, that there's a lot of plays that go into the middle of the field where you would think. Now, they started to do it a little bit more later in the season last year than they did earlier in the season, so maybe that's something they'll build on. But if you look at how the offense is built and designed, I mean, Adam, it's really built to sort of keep the middle open for running lanes and get the ball down the field on the outside of the field. And get the ball to people in space out of, you know, in the perimeter. That's kind of how the offense is designed. But I think that they could exploit the middle of the field a little bit more than they do. Jerry Dulac, you know, again, we're talking about camp. We're talking about, you know, training camp where they're not going to show a ton. You know, especially early on, they're not going to show a ton of what the offense really is and some of the wrinkles that they're going to add. So I would say it's very early. It's something they're able to do, but Adam, if you look at Matt Canada's history, it's not something his offense is designed to really take advantage of and exploit.
I want to ask you about a thought another one of our colleagues, Joe Starkey, expressed in a column. I believe it was today, Wednesday, when we're recording this, that he thinks the Steelers should win 11 games. And this was not based on training camp hype, so I don't want to necessarily connect Joe to the people that are overhyping, you know, the Steelers. His thought was more he expects Kenny Pickett to be better. He expects T.J. Watt to be healthy, and he expects the schedule to be pretty light considering the Steelers are drawing some bad teams or teams that should be bad. Do you think that that's a reasonable win total, Paul? Or are you looking at something less than that in terms of expectations for this team? I guess I'm just trying to get a picture of where you think 11 wins fits on the spectrum of where expectations should be versus, you know, when are they starting to get out of hand?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, they had nine wins last year. So we're talking about a 2-win improvement. And if you consider the beginning of the year, they were, you know, messing around with quarterback issues and all the other stuff. And what were they, like 2-6 or 2-5 or something? Or, you know, I think it's reasonable, but again, I think it might be a little too much. I 10 to me seems to be the number that I have is sort of their peak. 10 seems to be reasonable. It's enough of an improvement over last year. But again, I have to see this team play. There's so many things you could like about this team, right? But I have to see the play before I decide whether or not, you know, for instance, the offensive line, like we talked about, or Kenny Pickett, or this or that, or the other thing. I look at the schedule. I think the AFC North is going to be a brutal grind for them. It wouldn't shock me if they go 2-4 in those games. And if they go 2-4 in those games, I think it's going to be tough to get to 11 wins. I really do. And so, you know, obviously they're not going to lose every one of their games, but they've got a number of games like against San Francisco and really good teams. You know, if you go 2-4, I mean, you're basically only talking about you need to lose three of those other toss-up games, and you're at 7 losses. So to me, I think 10-7 is probably the most reasonable number that I've heard, 10-7. I think 11-6 is a little too much. 9-8, probably not quite enough.
Yeah, I think Joe's idea was that they split the games in the division. And I agree with you. I don't think that that's a necessarily easy thing to do. It sounds easy, but I don't think it is, given what's, and given the firepower some of these other division rivals have. And he thinks that they're going to steal a game somewhere, maybe like a Green Bay at home. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that number holds up. Paul, we're going to move into the Pirates here in a second. Before we do, just wanted to give a shout out to Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Thank them, as always, for sponsoring all of our Steelers coverage this season. Paul, I want to move into the Pirates. The trade deadline just passed. You wrote a column that was published, I believe, Wednesday, saying that you're feeling optimistic about this team's future now that they've moved on from some of these veteran guys who in some cases were pulling their weight, in some cases were not. Can you expound on your thoughts on why you're optimistic about the Pirates? You know, maybe related to the trade deadline, but maybe not related to that at all.
Well, my thoughts about the trade deadline is very simple. They, you know, what did they get rid of? You know, they offloaded some guys. It wasn't like this full-scale, you know, fire sale that some people wanted to make it out to be. I mean, they basically offloaded some guys to make room for some other guys. But I looked at them, at this team, and I look around and I say this. They've got a couple of really good options at second base, young guys, you know, who are going to be around for a long time, regardless of which way you want to, you know, tell me who it is that you think is going to emerge. I think I picked Nick Gonzalez. It could be somebody else. Because there's a few options there. O'Neill Cruz at short. Ke'Bryan Hayes at third. You've got, you know, an outfield now that looks like Davis, Sawinski, and Reynolds. I'm not sure that that's the best defensive outfield you could put out there, but it's not terrible defensively. And the other thing is I think they could be really, really productive, you know, at the plate. And they're both, you know, all three of them are going to be around for a while. Andy Rodriguez behind the plate. So, I mean, you basically you've got – what looks like a roster that can be in place for the next three, four years, right? With reasonably good options, not superstars at every place, but reasonably good major league options at every position, except for one. And this is where it becomes a little bit foggy for me. Okay. Who's going to play first? Who's going to play first base? And my thing with that is, that will tell me every single thing I need to know about whether or not they're serious about winning next year. Do they go out and get a real first baseman? I don't want to hear about some Connor Joe-like project that they're going to just throw in there. Some veteran who's over the hill, like another Carlos Santana, you know, because then if that's the case, they should have just kept Carlos Santana around. But to me, are you really serious about winning? If you are, you're going to go out and you're going to get a first baseman. You're going to, you know, if it costs you a little bit of money to do it, you're going to do that. But you're going to make sure that you have a legitimate option at first. and somebody who can be productive at the plate. I'm not saying you got to go get a 40 home run guy, but it can't be just one of these guys who, well, he's a journeyman veteran guy. He's good in the clubhouse. You know, he's this and that and the other thing. It's got to be a legitimate option. But you go from there, you've got Oviedo, you've got Mitch Keller, and you've got Quinn Priester. I mean, it feels like that's the start of a reasonably decent pitching staff, right? You hope you throw Paul Skenes in there, and then you're basically one guy away, and maybe that one guy is Ronzi Contreras, you know, who goes and sees a witch doctor or something in the offseason and comes back and remembers how to pitch. So to me, you know, it's all kind of there. There's a structure. There's a foundation. I'm not saying they're, you know, ready to win the World Series. I'm not saying that they are the best team even in their division. But I do think I can actually see a structure now. I can actually see some semblance of a plan coming together. Now, again, they've got to finish the job, which is go get a first baseman, beef up the bullpen a little bit, go find one more starter. Okay, you do that. Maybe they have a shot next year to get to, contention and maybe even win a wild card. But let me say this, Adam. If they don't win 81 games or more next year, 81 has to be the standard. That really does. If they don't put together a team next year that can win more games than it loses, then it is a complete failure. I'm sorry. I don't want to hear about 77 wins or 78 wins and we were close and all that stuff. This is year five you're going into, and you've kind of, you know, did all of the stuff where you've cut a lot of the fat out, and now you've got your team and your roster. Now go win.
Paul, I want to pull up that first base thread a little bit because the thing I wrote this morning was I do my monthly analytics trends, and Henry Davis, believe it or not, is below replacement level as a player, as a total thing, because his defense in right field has been measured poorly by the metrics. I think he's two run defensive runs saved to the negative. I think two fielding runs above average to the negative, which over a season wouldn't be a big deal, but that's trending toward being like 8-10 runs below average in those categories over the course of a full season. That's disastrous, Paul. That's not good enough. Do you look at Henry Davis as a possible solution to that first base question, just given that it does not seem like the uptake at, you know, at in right field is working, and now you don't have guys blocking him there, and you don't have Austin Hedges blocking him behind the plate, so maybe he's doing some kind of catching first base timeshare?
I would have no problem with that, to be honest, if that's what they decide. But again, if that's what they're going to decide, why not do it now? Like, why have Connor Joe taking reps at first base when he's not going to be around? You know, if Henry Davis is somebody that they're looking at as an option there, put him there now in a lost season. Let him make his mistakes and get his experience and get better. I mean, that's what this is about these next 2 months. But it seems like they want to see if he can get better in right field. I don't think he's a good enough defensive player to have him, you know, pulled between positions. You want to tell me maybe he's a right field first base combo guy? I'm not sure I would love that, but certainly not catcher first base or catcher right field. I fully believe that they need to go get, dare I say it, they need to go get another Austin Hedges type next year to be their backup catcher. So they have a backup catcher. And then let Andy Rodriguez just be your full-time catcher. Figure out what's best for Henry Davis in terms of how can you best use him in the field. If it's at first base, that's fine, because I do think they have some other options in the outfield more so than they do at first base. If it's at first base, that's fine. But to me, everything I've read about him, everything I've talked to people about him, he's just never going to be a good catcher. So there's no reason in the world even to play around with that. Get him in a position where he can really learn every day and hopefully get better every day at whatever position he settles in. But I wouldn't hate it at first base.
Paul, before I get to some college football realignment talk, I wanted to ask you real quick about your thoughts on David Bednar and Mitch Keller staying. I think you were pretty interested in seeing what they could get for David Bednar in particular. I think you were willing to listen in terms of Mitch Keller. both of those guys end up staying. What are your thoughts on that topic? And do you think the Pirates made the right move to keep those guys if they weren't blown away by the offers?
Well, the thing is, if they don't sign Keller now to an extension, then this is ridiculously stupid. And from what Jason Mackey was talking about the other day, it sounds like they're miles apart in number, which means if they don't come up with an extension, they're probably going to trade him in the offseason. If they trade him in the offseason, every single person should be fired in that place because it's just silly. You know, I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand what they're doing. They kept him. Now pay the guy. Give him an extension. Pay the guy so you know that you have him for the next 4 or 5 years. And he's and theoretically going to be a big part of your rotation. As for Bednar, again, Adam, I've always said a closer's value most of the time for a bad team is as a trade piece. So now they kept him. They must think they're going to win next year. But if next year at this time, you know, they're losing again and they trade him next year, then it'll be silly because his value will be a little less. He'll have a little bit more mileage on his arm and he'll have a little bit less control on his contract. And so to me, I'm okay with it if it works out and they are committed to keeping both of these guys as a big part of their future. But boy, if they go and if they don't give Mitch Keller an extension, then I think what they did at the trade deadline is silly.
Paul, I mentioned the college realignment talks. Colorado looks like it's heading to the Big 12 here. Looks like other schools from the Big 12 are looking for the life raft. We got the news early this week that the television contract that the Pac-12 commissioner presented to those schools was basically an Apple TV Plus deal to pay substantially less than the Big 12. No one wants to put this conference on television, and yet it's everywhere. No one wants to talk about anything else than the Pac-12. You got all these guys on Twitter making up all these rumors that I don't think any of them have turned out to be true until, you know, maybe 5% of the stuff that gets thrown out there ends up playing out that way. Paul, where are we headed with this? Is the Pac-12 done? And is it going to be done by the end of the summer, or is this maybe going to take a year to play out?
If the Arizona State to the Big 12 rumor is true, then yes, the Pac-12 is officially over. That's the only one that really is, to me, the final straw, although there's a new one now, Oregon and Washington, to the Big Ten. But if either of those two things happen, the Pac-12, as we know it, is officially over. You know, they're talking about backfilling with UNLV and SMU and some of these teams like that. It reminds me of when I covered the Big East, when I covered Pitt and I covered the Big East, you know. And they were losing Virginia Tech and Miami and Boston College. And then there was like basically, let's just sit here with a dartboard and basically throw darts at every, you know, unaffiliated school or school in a smaller conference. You know, Central Florida, Tulane, Tulsa, this, that. It was like even Bob Huggins made fun of that whole idea. Okay, basically we're going to take all of these teams, none of which bring real value back to us, and this is going to save our conference. So, to me, I would watch Arizona. If the Arizona State, Utah thing happens, then the Pac-12 is over, and that actually would be a good thing. The Big Ten should take Oregon and Washington, right? Maybe even Stanford and Cal, because they fit with the Big Ten as well. You would give yourself, you'd give yourself and use USC and UCLA some natural geographic rivals. You'd really expand your footprint, you know, to really cover the entire, you know, Midwest and West. So I just say, whenever it comes to this conference realignment, I always treat it the same way I treat coaching searches, which is everybody is lying until it's a done deal. Everybody is lying. But it would be the best thing for college sports if they got to 4 mega conferences with about 80 teams in 4 conferences, and then tried to redo, you know, the college football playoff, and I would even say break away from the NCAA, create your own league. That to me is, I think, where it should all head, at least for college football. College athletics in general, you know, I think basketball, I think everything else should all remain under the umbrella of the NCAA, but football is a different animal altogether, and it's grown such a life of its own. It almost feels like that's where it's headed.
Paul, I loved your references to the Big East. I love how the now AAC, which was mostly the old Big East members that were left over after everyone left, is basically what Conference USA was before, you know, before the whole Big East reorganization or whatever. It feels like that's the direction. If there is a Pac-12 anymore, that's what's going to remain is something that looks more like the Mountain West than the Pac-12. I'll get you out of here on this, Paul. You mentioned Oregon and Washington to the Big Ten. The Big Ten has seemed hesitant to scoop those schools up, though. They could have had them a year ago. They could have brought them in with USC and UCLA if they really wanted to. Do you think they're going to end up providing enough value to that league to be added, or do you think, you know, they could be ending up in a Big 12 that now is maybe rivaling the ACC in terms of what's going to be the third-tier league once everything shakes out here?
Well, you know, I think that the Big Ten is being smart because they have to make sure that they can maintain the amount of money per school, right, to make it worth their while. So they're probably being smart and cautious. I think the Big 12 should be the garbage collector, to be honest. And if you ask me, there's this other rumor about Florida State and Clemson now going to the Big 10. I mean, the thing with that is Florida State and Clemson, it's not as easy to get out of the ACC as some of the other schools because of the grant of rights deal and all the other stuff. So, again, everybody's lying. But to answer your question, I think Oregon and Washington could be good partners for the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten needs to figure out if they are going to be worth it financially, because you got to cut the pie a little bit, you know. So are they going to bring the amount of money that you're going to cut the pie two more ways? But either way, you made a really good point. If I'm the Big 12, I'm trying to scoop them all up because that's how you sustain yourself. In fact, if I'm the Big 12, I'm angry that I went and got Cincinnati and Houston and all these other schools, because I maybe would have been able to, if I'd have waited a year, really load up my conference with all a bunch of power schools from the Pac-12 and said, hey, let's merge. So, like I said, Adam, it's all going to be so much fun to watch how it all, you know, sort of plays out.
All right, Paul, well, that's all I had for you this week. Any final thoughts?
No, I appreciate it. I really do. I appreciate we'll do it again next week. Next week, we'll be talking about, I think all the colleges are in camps too, so we'll be talking about how all of those teams are going 12-0.
I'm sure they're all going to be great. There will be nothing bad happening at Pitt, Penn State, or West Virginia. Penn State and West Virginia will both win that opening game. It'll be a feat of genius. But, Paul, thanks for joining me, and we will talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good, Adam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you liked the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you enjoyed it on Apple Podcasts, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. For 6 months of digital access to post-gazette.com for just $6, click the link down in the description.